This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Welcome back. We missed you. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Apologies for coming back. Not 100% well, but I hope that we can get through the block nose nonetheless. And interesting pictures coming from Australia, where President Isaac Herzog has laid a wreath at the site in Bondi, where Jews were killed, as we recall, during Hanukkah, and the significance of that cannot be mistaken. He's obviously felt it necessary to go to Australia and to make a statement about being a Jew and being an Israeli and being in Australia. And he's obviously made that statement very loudly, so we will watch the rest of his visit quite closely. But for those people who are winter sports enthusiasts, you might have noticed that the Winter Olympics has begun, the 2026 version of the Winter Olympics, which is taking place this year in Cortina d'Ampezzo in Italy. And interestingly, the opening ceremony took place both in Milan and in Cortina. And there is an Israeli delegation in Cortina, 9 participants all in all. Obviously, Israel is not particularly well known for winter sports, and I think we can all understand why, even though, interestingly, skiing and snowboarding and winter sport activity of that sort is incredibly popular in Israel, and you would be absolutely shocked to know how many people over the course of the winter make trips to Europe in order to have a week or two skiing in the Alps or wherever it is. It is a very, very popular endeavor in Israel, and there are people who will clearly be watching the Winter Olympics in Cortina. This year, the bearers of the Israeli flag were Maria Senyuk, who is a figure skater, and Jared Firestone, who is a participant in the skeleton event. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever watched the skeleton event, but it does make me wonder why people do it. It is just one of the most scary thing to watch. But Jared carried the flag. And interestingly, Jared also wore a kippah where he had engraved the names of the 11 victims of the Munich massacre in 1972. Wow. Those Israelis who were the members of the Olympic delegation and the coaches of the athletes who were killed in Munich in 1972 at the Summer Olympics, he had their names engraved on a kippah. And that kippah was worn at the opening ceremony where Jared bore the Israeli flag. So a very emotional moment, I think, for all of us, just to think back to those victims and the fact that, again, people were killed because they were Jews and because they were Israelis. No other reason but for that at the Summer Olympics in 1972 in Munich. So we will be watching to see how the Israeli participants get along. There are participants in alpine skiing, men and women participants, and bobsleigh for the first time this year. Both the 2-man and the 4-man bobsleigh have Israeli teams. Cross-country skiing, figure skater, which is, of course, Maria, we mentioned her before, and Jared, who will be participating in the skeleton event. So those who like this kind of fearless sport, this is definitely for you.
Amazing. Absolutely incredible. Let's talk about what happened on Friday, the first meeting in the current round of talks between the U.S. and Iran. It ended inconclusively on Friday with an agreement to meet again, probably in the next few days. Has this taken the matter forward? What is really going on here?
Well, I think in order for us to understand where this is going, we need to understand where the intention is, what the Americans really wish to achieve. And the truth is that we don't know. The Americans have not said publicly what it is that they're trying to achieve. I know that President Trump has said on a few occasions that he wants to ensure that Iran cannot build a nuclear weapon. But I just wonder whether that is ultimately the objective here and whether there isn't something a little more, whether regime change is not part of the objective right now. And if indeed regime change is part of the objective, then these talks are just kind of, you know, not going anywhere. They're not helping us progress anywhere, because to talk with the regime about regime change clearly doesn't work very well. So I am not quite sure how to interpret what's going on, whether it's kind of just a holding pattern to allow the American forces to group and to be ready for whatever comes next, whether it is coordination with Israel, whether it is just to show the world that all efforts have been exhausted before the final military action comes. All of those are clear possibilities, and I suspect that they probably are all relevant. Interestingly, the Iranians came out of the meeting on Friday very gung-ho. They transmitted to the Americans their list of demands that the development of nuclear capabilities and uranium enrichment will definitely not be given up, that they will not give up. And they will not give up the right to build ballistic missiles, that they definitely won't give up. And they've already told the Americans that any discussions about regional developments are clearly off the agenda. So this is the Iranian style of doing business. These are the things that we definitely are not willing to talk about at these talks. And we are very enthusiastic and we're very optimistic about the talks. But here's a list of things that we definitely are not going to talk about or are going to agree to. So it all sounds extremely strange, I have to say, with the Iranians trying to put up a very, very brave front, trying to show bravado against the great and the tough Americans. We know that the talks in Oman were indirect talks with the Omani foreign minister shuttling apparently between the two delegations. I think that there was once a term that was coined called shuttle diplomacy. And I think that this was a classic case of shuttle diplomacy, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, and the commander of CENTCOM, interestingly, the American general who is in charge of the Central Command and who would be responsible for any attack against Iran, also in Oman to talk with the Iranians and to be part of the delegation. The shuttle diplomacy went on. It didn't seem like it went on for very long. It kind of lasted maybe a half a day. The Americans came out saying, oh, we've spoken about how are we going to conduct the talks rather than anything substantive. I don't know whether they really wanted to talk about anything substantive. The Iranians came out saying, we've given the list of things that we're definitely not going to agree to, or we're definitely not going to talk about. And that was the way it was left. So now the press is saying, well, the next round of talks, which is due to take place soon, within the next few days, needs to be something substantial. And the Iranian foreign minister really needs to bring something very, very special in order to move the talks forward. I don't know whether he necessarily sees things that way, because, as I say, the Iranians have come out with lots and lots of things that they're not willing to agree to or not willing to talk about. But, of course, uranium enrichment is, according to the Iranians, inalienable in their right to continue with. They do add the word peaceful enrichment of uranium or for peaceful purposes, but we all know that that is just a front for what they ultimately plan to do. So all in all, if you're asking whether I think that there's any progress made, I think not. I think that we're just in a holding pattern right now, and that inevitably something will need to blow, and there will need to be some sort of a substantial event of some sort, maybe even over the next few weeks. But I don't think that these talks are really of any significance.
What is the point of these talks? I'm so confused by it, because whatever Iran signs isn't worth the paper it's written on. It's very clearly their intention to develop nuclear weapons, to be a global power of note, to be able to continue to fund terror and Islamism around the world. Who are we kidding? No matter what they agreed to, it's never going to happen.
I think that the Trump administration understands this pretty well. And I don't know that the Trump administration, in spite of them sending senior delegates like Witkoff and Jared Kushner and the commander of CENTCOM, Brett Cooper, to the talks, I don't know that the Americans really feel that there is a deal to be done here. I mean, of course, President Trump publicly says, oh, the talks went very well and there is a deal to be done. And if the deal isn't done, the consequences could be dire. So, of course, there is always the threat that he comes up with. But he's trying to put on a brave and a positive and optimistic face, publicly at least, to say, well, you know, this is all very helpful. But I think the American administration understands exactly what you've said, Howard. And I don't know that they really feel that there is a deal to be done. I just think that this is a holding pattern right now to allow all the pieces on the chessboard to be put in place for the next move, which will probably be an attempt to put Iran into check and to put it into a place that it can't move away from. At the moment, Israel, of course, is also on high alert. Interestingly, Prime Minister Netanyahu will travel to the U.S. tomorrow to meet with President Trump on Wednesday. So that was a meeting that was put together quite quickly and quite suddenly without prior planning. It also makes one wonder exactly what has precipitated the situation where they feel they need to sit down face to face and can't talk about it on the phone or on a secure line or whatever it is. They're going to sit down on Wednesday in the U.S. to discuss whatever it is that's on the agenda. Mm-hmm. All of this indicates to me that this is just a holding pattern for whatever's going to come next.
Yep, you probably, as always on these things, are right. The cabinet yesterday approved a significant package of measures that will change the complexities of land ownership in Judea and Samaria. What are these changes?
So I'm not sure that listeners will even be aware of the fact that Israelis, Jewish Israelis, are not allowed to own land in Judea and Samaria in their own personal capacity. That is something that the law currently doesn't allow. And the way that that has been circumvented, in a sense, is that Israelis have had to set up complex corporate structures in order to be able to own land in Judea and Samaria. More than that, the land registry has been kept secret, confidential, and nobody has access to the land registries, or at least until yesterday, nobody had access to land registries in Judea and Samaria. And now the cabinet has decided that the removal of this confidentiality is appropriate and that there should be a publication of the land registries. It should be publicly available, and it should be allowed that Jews can buy land in Judea and Samaria without the need to shield themselves with complex structures in order to allow them to own the land. Now, the issue of Judea and Samaria is highly complex, and I don't think in the next 3 minutes that we're going to be able to cover all of it. But the truth of the matter is that Judea and Samaria were conquered and never annexed by Israel. So therefore, Israeli law doesn't apply to Judea and Samaria in the classic sense that it applies to all other parts of Israel, because it is not annexed to Israel and has not been formally attached to the land of Israel. So how then do we go about dealing with a situation like this? And I suppose that there may well be precedents elsewhere in the world. How do Turks, for example, own land in northern Cyprus? Just as a question, because again, that's also a land that was conquered in a war that hasn't been annexed and yet people live there in their own land. I don't know the answer to that. But interestingly, in the case of Judea and Samaria, there were even some Jordanian laws that applied that were still being respected up until yesterday in Judea and Samaria, and which the cabinet has decided should no longer be respected and should no longer be the order of the day in that area. So there are changes which have been mooted. And of course, unsurprisingly, these have been supported by Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich. He's come with that agenda item already for some time. That's his constituency, people who have wanted to make these changes for some time, to effectively make Judea and Samaria more part of Israel than it is today, even though it is not annexed to Israel, but to somehow apply Israeli law in a more uniform fashion across those areas. Now, I don't know what the international law status is of that and how one should be viewing that. But it is an interesting conversation. I think the other conversation is whether the timing is right to make these changes, because even if one believes very confidently and very passionately that these changes are fully justified and that Jews should be allowed to own land in Judea Samaria without having to set up structures and that the land registries should be made public and all of those changes that are to be made, including another change, which I haven't mentioned, which is a planning authority in Hebron. They've decided that there will be a planning authority which will administer the area, the Jewish areas near to the Cave of the Patriarchs and other holy sites that will be transferred to the civil administration planning body. That was never the case up until now. So a little bit of organization also around Rachel's tomb, which gets an administrative upgrade and which will allow, even though it's within the municipal boundaries of Bethlehem, that it will have a dedicated municipal directorate to oversee sanitation and waste removal and landscaping and other routine maintenance at the site. So those are some of the changes. And even if we think that those are all positive and correct and good moves that are justified, do you think that the timing now is right to do this? Timing, of course, is everything. And maybe it's the ideal time. But of course, we always need to think about why now, and what is the what are the consequences of this timing? And maybe just before whatever might blow open in Iran, this is taking place, it'll kind of be smothered over and forgotten about when more significant events take place. So I just wonder whether that might not be the ultimate objective of this exercise.
Very interesting. What do you think? 061-895-1019. What do you think about the timing of this? What do you think about the decision as well as the timing? I'd love to hear from you, Anthony Reich. Great to have you back. As always, we can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45. Anthony, wishing you a full and speedy recovery.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.